Hi everyone, and welcome to the Cover Mindset podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your founder and host, Lonnie McGinley. Today we're joined by Brian De Vries. How are you, Brian?
I'm alright. Thank you. How are you? How about you?
Well, I'm good, thank you. We've already had a discussion of your name first, so I'll try my best to, you know, go more Dutch in the my pronunciation.
Yeah, you do well.
Yeah. Can you just tell the listeners a bit about background about yourself?
Yeah, surely. Brian De Vries, like you mentioned, Dutch, from the Netherlands, Alphen aan den Rijn, 29 years old at the moment. Coached for about 15 years right now, starting from an assistant coach of the U8, still like right now first team coach of the Sparta Rotterdam women side. I've been coaching for over 5 years in China, and also playing football myself still. So that's mostly shortly what's about me. Yeah,
and let's go back to the kind of childhood. Like, were you always interested in football? Was that something you played? Were you like street football? You know, I love the Johan Cruyff. You know, he talks about you've been, you know, on that hitting that wall 30, 40, 50 times, but it's going to come back 30, 40 different ways. Did you have a lot of kind of street football when you were younger to develop kind of individual skills? And is that something that you've tried to maybe work on when you're kind of coaching?
Well, it's unconsciously, basically. I was actually talking about this last week about like something like this. Like, I mean, in the Netherlands, you have a lot of community football. I think I started playing football since I was 4 or 5 years old. My dad brought me to the stadium. I think when I was even younger, I went to play football at the amateur football club in my hometown. Next to that, if you grow a little bit older, you play in the streets, you play in the academy teams and stuff. And I think till like 14, 15 years old, you always also play on the streets. So next to your 2 or 3 times training a week, you spend the nights till the lights go off or go on, and the sun goes down, you play outside, you know. And that's something of the qualities as well that Cruyff also mentioned. Like, yeah, you guys in the Netherlands, we play in the training, but we also play a lot on the streets, and that is how you develop. And also, because coaching now, sometimes we try to bring it back to the kids at the moment, but in the moment it's for sure a little bit different. But like, yeah, I played a lot on the streets, played a lot on the in the trainings, always since from a very young age. I really loved football, I was really passionate. And I think, like everyone else, you dream when you are young about being a professional football player. Well, that didn't work out maybe, but I can at least say I'm a professional coach right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because you're working with a kind of professional environment, but going back to what you said, you're kind of working with under-8s, under-10s, the younger kids. Do you think having that individual practice, you know, like street football, 1v1s, 2v2s, is fundamental to help with the boys' games and the girls' games? Because obviously we talked about there your Sparta Rotterdam's, you know, head coach for the women, but working with the younger ones, do you think having that fundamentals of skill development is key for developing their cognitive style, their tactical, technical, but also the part of the kind of physical, you know, invasion games? Do you think that's a big thing where you've tried to implement that in your kind of coaching from a kind of younger age?
Yes, correct. I do think there is like a little line in there, because obviously when the kids want to play a 1v1, they need to have certain control over the ball. So I think if you talk about like really the fundamentals, like the kids from like 5, 6 years old, I would play a lot of with the ball, 1v0s, or putting some time pressure on them, make it games, make it fun. When you talk about U7, U8s, if you go into the 1v1s, the 2v2s, the 1v2s, I think it's crucial for them in terms of applying the technical parts that they practiced before as well. Next to that, I think you should continue all the way up. Like, even with the first team now, we're doing a lot of 2v1s, 1v1s, 3v2s, maybe more in transition games and also a bit tactical and stuff. But I do think it's really good to do it all over the youth development, and even in the first teams you can still apply this. But like you mentioned, I think especially in the foundation phase, they should do this really a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's kind of look at the China. You know, you look at the kind of Asian culture. It's very technical. Everything's very, you know, like we look at like the kind of Japanese to the kind of South Korean to the kind of Chinese, and it all works out in a way that they're trying to master the ball. You know what I mean? And it's something. Did you have, when you were working in China, see the role that you had? Was it very, you know, more technical, or was it just to develop players or coaches? Or just tell us about your role and how you kind of managed to, you know, communicate with the players, because obviously speaking a different language sometimes is very difficult, but learning how to just use keywords, you know, is a big thing. But I know work ethic's a big part of the kind of culture over there.
Yeah, so my role at first when I arrived to China was like football director and head coach of a private football club called Century Park FC, and I had the young kids from like U6 to like U14. I did it over 2 years, and there most of the times we also did like the ball mastery, ball control and stuff. Just in Shanghai, especially in the area I worked in Pudong at the time, that's the east side of Shanghai, they all speak English, and maybe not like native, but like they understand if you say something. And I also still believe if I speak really slow and try to be nice to the kids and they try really to understand me, they will understand me. As I progress in the years, I also went to Waikiki Power School, where I did the high school, the U19s of the boys and the girls. They study in English, so there we just communicate in English, to be honest. Like, that's really easy. Their English is fantastic, and they will also go abroad after all. But also the last 2 years, I worked in a city next to Shanghai called Spinghu, and there nobody speaks English. Luckily, my first year in China, I studied 3 times a week Chinese, so I got some basics, some foundation to build on. But I also just really talk to the kids, talk to the people on the street, try to understand them, what you say correctly. We're using keywords, but on one moment you can actually make a phrase out of it. And if you try to prepare yourself, oh, where is the space? And if you try to look a bit for yourself, if that's your topic of the training and how you're gonna say this, then you can also discuss this before with the kids, and they really want to help you, because they also like when I speak English to them, but they also find it really nice if I speak Chinese to them. Yeah. So it's like a cooperation between the players, the kids, and the coach. And as it's like, it's my third language, the Chinese. Obviously, Dutch is my first one. English will do as my second. But like, if I speak English, maybe that I say everything correctly. But if you want to understand me, you will understand me. If someone comes to the Netherlands and try to speak Dutch, then if I try very hard, I will understand what they say. And it's the same with Chinese. If I speak Chinese, I might be not saying it completely correct. But if the person who is receiving the information try to understand me, they will understand me.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Because I was reading a really good article on the ALMA's, the manager. And it was Paul Lambert, the ex-Celtic player, and Borussia Dortmund. And he said that he did his pro license in Germany in German, and he said that was the biggest, one of the biggest learning curves, because what he said was, in it, he said, there's no prisoners, you know, you have to do the level that you're at. So learning a new language, but this is like, you've got a lot of apps out there, you know, Duolingo, and you've got like people pay a lot of money for tutors, but also there's a lot of good coaches out there who will help you translate. But this is the thing, when you're working in a kind of different country and you're the foreign person, do you think that the kids and also the parents and the other coaches around you actually respect you more if you try and speak to them in their language? And you might make a few mistakes, but at least you're trying to be at your comfort zone. And that was, again, in football, it's a bit more, you have kind of keywords, but sometimes you get invited to more, you know, like maybe parties or like events or something like that, because you've went out your comfort zone. And this is what was really interesting about the article, because he said that when you're in the kind of pro license or you're on a course and it's in a foreign language, you need to go to what they say, you know, but then you can translate it back. But do you think that, did you have a through your mindset of, sometimes thinking this is really difficult. You know, like one day you have to translate from, you know, Chinese to English and English to Chinese, and it's quite heavy, you know, with the, maybe some players don't speak any English, but you need to try different ways. What kind of other techniques did you try and use to, you know, develop that kind of communication? Is that something you maybe thought about more afterwards, or was the advantage doing that course 3 times a week?
Yeah, so the course 3 times a week definitely worked, but like I have a little technique for it, because obviously sometimes I communicate in 3 different languages, which is a bit confusing. But if I need to speak in English, I will first try to get my mind in English, so I'm thinking in English. So basically for 5 minutes long, I'm just thinking in English about everything. If I need to speak in Dutch, I will listen to some Dutch music and think in Dutch a little bit for like 4 or 5 minutes, and then I go. Same thing with Chinese. If I know that I need to go to a session and I can only speak Chinese there, I will listen to some Chinese things, or I will think in Chinese already. So when I start the session, then I'm ready to talk in that language. Because otherwise, you will just mess up. Sometimes I translate. So if I do like English and Chinese, then I think, okay, better I think in Chinese than I speak in English. If I think in English and I need to translate to Chinese, that takes longer for me than the other way around.
Yeah.
But I think in the summer, we work with Ajax. We work with the international camps and clinics. But obviously, Ajax very famous, especially also with Cruyff. But like, we do the camps and the kids come all over the world, come to Ajax to have the training. But obviously, I need to speak. They're also Dutch people, so I need to speak in Dutch, and then I need to speak in English. So I'm with the microphone talking to everyone, to the parents, like 250, 500 parents, 200 kids, and I'm like, okay, I speak Dutch, I speak English, speak Dutch, I speak English. And one of the times, one time also, someone said, like, you know that you actually say something else in Dutch than in English, right? I was like, yeah, maybe, you know. But sometimes it's confusing, and you also need to don't be shy, and sometimes you make a mistake, and you can also take that away to the players that you have. Hey, everyone can make a mistake. It's fine. You understand me. Here we go. And we just go on, you know.
Yeah, because that's the... It seems like a really, you know, European thing that see, like, a lot of children learn English as a second language, like the Scandinavian, the Dutch, mm-hmm. the Spanish, the Portuguese. But then, like, some people in Scotland and England, you know, or Britain, really struggle to learn that second language. And we're kind of sometimes a little bit afraid of making a mistake. You know, like, I can understand Spanish and translate it pretty well. Portuguese, okay. Dutch, I can understand a little bit. Not obviously pronunciations, as we know. And also, I'm learning a couple of the Scandinavian languages. But I love, there was an article again that said the second language is actually the most important, because that gets... Speaking English, great, it kind of gets you in the door, but the second language actually makes you go, do you know what, I'm going to see if I can go to a conference that's in total, and like, see if it's in German. You've got 6 months to learn some kind of a language, you know, a new language, but if you can put yourself, your mind to it, you can ask a question in German, and do you know what, they probably understand you a little bit more if you try it a bit slower, but it gets you this respect, and that's the... Obviously, when you're working at different levels, you know, professional, you're going to deal with players that have, you know, different nationalities, and you need to learn how to maybe speak to different ones. But when you were at kind of the job at the moment, Rotterdam, Sparta Rotterdam, you must have, obviously, a lot of it's going to be Dutch players, but sometimes you have to deal with people that don't speak Dutch, might speak English. So how do you try and work at a professional level to get your message across when you're trying to do training sessions? And then we'll talk about that a little bit more later on.
Yeah, no, at the women's side, we just have Dutch girls at the moment, so that is not really on topic. Just like, I do understand what you mean. Like, I mean, you have one first language in the club, in your team, which you talk about. So, a few times in China, I had it more often that the half of my team speak English and the other half is Chinese. So what I'm going to do, you can also do involve it, and you need to really think in advance what you're going to say, because you will not have time to do your 5 or 6 minutes team talk in Dutch and in Chinese and in English, or the other way, or which language you ever use, you know. So you're like, okay, you have some key elements that you really want to point out. Okay, there you go, you do it in two languages. The other ones, you speak in language that most people understand. Yeah, or the best understanding have. So maybe you have like 10 Dutch people and a few English, then better you do it in English, because the Dutch people will also understand the English part, and then you can talk in detail a little bit more with the player himself in his language or her language.
Yeah.
So obviously when you work on the higher level you go, you also have a bigger staff. So it's also not really like you need to do all up to yourself, you know. So if you work in grassroots or like a semi-pro level, probably you are like the head coach, the assistant coach, and the physio yourself a lot of times, right? So then you need to do the most of the things yourself. But if you work on a higher level, you also have more stuff around you who can help you with things. And I think managing that is a really big thing at the moment as well. If you see as well the pro club sitting with like 10, 12 people on the bench, three people looking at an iPad, three doctors as well. So it's more managing than that you just basically do everything, you know. So
yeah, because I was reading that, I was listening to a podcast, and they talked about this guy, well, it's like a top class manager, but he says he speaks six different languages, but it takes him years to finally. But he said that he needed a job, let's say it was a job in Germany, you need to speak German. So he says, well, yeah, I employed someone for a week, 2 or 3 weeks, intensive course, and then I went out and I spoke my press conference in German. It wasn't the best, but I knew. But then you look at, I think it was Unai Emery, he was at Arsenal, and he got absolutely slaughtered a lot of the time, or slated for his English. His English is a lot better now, but I was listening to like another podcast, and they said, see, when he was doing these kind of interviews or these kind of newsrooms he was like working in, he was okay. But when it came to the kind of like one or two journalists, you know, like to do like a newspaper or something, he spoke Spanish because he had a bit more. It was a bit more fluent in it because he had more emotion. Now, do you think that, see, if you want a job, let's say in a different country, do you think having that extra information, you know, like that extra language, is helpful? Because you look at Bielsa, didn't speak too. I had no idea if he speaks good English or not, because he's very quiet and these kind of things. But he probably speaks better English than all of us. But do you think having that, going to a different country, you know, and learning the language beforehand, you know, and then knowing, okay, I'm going to get a job. I might be here for a year, maybe for 6 months, but at least I'm learning something. Do you think learning two or three languages is key to development on the coaching side, but also personal development?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, as a coach, there are different things, but I mean, it's important. But as a person, on a personal level, and you learn a new language, that's massive. That's really big time development. And also, I think with that, you enrich yourself with different perspectives of lives again, you know. But like, because not the language is not just spoken words or meaning of words, it's also the way how people look at life, and I think that's that will help you as a coach. And I find it funny because, as you mentioned about the MRI, but like, I mean, Ten Hag at United, I think you guys understand him pretty well. Yeah. It's pretty clear. In the Netherlands, we make fun about him because of his English. You know, because he makes some simple mistakes, but in the end, everyone understands him in England. So there is not really an issue with that, you know. And that is the same thing. If I speak Chinese, obviously I make mistakes. But if you were, I wouldn't say, if I didn't study Chinese before I went to China, if I go to another country, I would not study. I would study a little bit. I want to know some words to be kind and be polite.
Yeah.
Just like you can learn the language better in that country. Because if you're going to study one-on-one with a teacher, obviously it helps, but you can learn the basics and the foundation with that. But if you want to up your level in a language, you need to go out, you need to talk to people on the street, because as everywhere in the world, I guess, like in countries, people speak with a different dialect.
Yeah.
So if you... if you go to Scotland or you're in England or I'm in London or I'm in Bristol or in Glasgow, it's completely different. You know, I really need to listen careful. It's the same in the Netherlands. If I'm in Rotterdam or I'm going to Groningen, I mean, I need to try my best to understand them, to be honest.
Yeah, because it's language, and this is the kind of, was going to the kind of main part of it. It's the obviously the job you're in. You need to speak to the players, you know, through like individual practice, through analysis, through you know, working with your assistant and all that. But working at a professional club, you know, there does have pressures. You know, dealing with pressure from managing upwards, you know, the board to, you know, the players and the people around you. Can you tell us a kind of typical week that would have for? Like for before, kind of from pre season to kind of January, and in January to like the end of the season, because we did mention beforehand, you know, when we spoke off air like a couple weeks ago about the kind of role that you had, and you had it was really difficult to start off with, but then you continued that kind of way of thinking. But this is really kind of interesting how you changed it just slightly, but I'd really be interested to see how you dealt with it before. And then kind of pre-season, mid-season and after-season, pro-season.
So obviously I started the job at Sparta in, I think I signed a contract in June and starting in July, and then the girls were off till August and we started in August. Just for me, I came back from a complete different culture for like 5 years, and you haven't left China the 3 years before because of Corona, because of COVID. So it was a bit different, a bit difficult, because every team, every club, every community has different rules, core values and stuff. And like when you get new into that, then you really, you need to kind of adjust yourself. You need to understand the core values at first. And obviously in the beginning that you need to find your way. How are you going to manage that? And that was a challenge that we worked hard on, discussed a lot with the rest of the staff. And we made some progression in that. In the end, like we, you want to do something as a coach, you know, you have your own idea, your own philosophy, your coaching style, etc. Just in the end, it's not about you, it's about the players. It's about the girls or the boys who are going to play, who is in the team, and how are you going to manage that, and how is going to fit your idea together with the girls, their idea, or with the boys, their idea. And that's an interesting mix. So in the beginning, you're always a little bit go forward, go a little bit left, go a bit right. In the end, you find a good mix to make it work. But obviously, that takes some time. And I think like reflecting on what is going on. So if something is going well, why it's going well, and if something is going bad, why it's going bad. Those things are really important. Oh, we played a really good game. Okay, why did we play a really good game? Because was there a lot of pressure on the ball? Did we go forward? Did everyone go forward? Was the defense doing really well or not? Or maybe in a bad game, the same thing. You know, if you play, if you lose a game, doesn't mean it is directly a very bad game. I mean, obviously you would like to win, especially when you play in the senior level. But like, you need to discuss that, also as the opinion of the players, and also if you have the opportunity to have the video analysis and stuff, to use that to see what is to see what is going on, because obviously during the game you're really coaching and then you understand a lot, but if you watch it back later you actually see way more. What we found out is that I think as well, a little bit different between the boys and the girls football, like for girls it's really much harder to develop in general, but their game is a bit more complicated, because if you see boys playing on the street, it's for everyone real normal. If you see girls playing on the street, you hear people talking, oh, that's weird, the girls are playing. I mean, luckily things changed a lot right now, just that happened before. Just these girls, they working really, really hard to get better and to do things, and you try to guide them with that. And with the boys, they are like watching the men's game, and if the women's, they watch the men's game a bit less. And there you need to talk about a lot, and step by step they're making a very good progression in this. What we did, we were sitting together with the players, and like in I guess January, I got a little injury, and I worked out everything on the left of the ideas. Okay, how are we going to do this? We obviously played everyone already one time, so we had as well the analysis of all the opponents again, and we changed a little bit in the training. We upgraded intensity a little bit, and that worked really well. That worked really well. I guess as well, like if you coach, you coach a lot of, what I see a lot of times, because I also see a lot of sessions from other coaches, it's like, oh, we're focusing on attacking, we are focusing on defending, or we're focusing on transition. I do think though one of those things can be the main topic, but you cannot do transition without defending and attacking, and you cannot do attacking without defending.
Yeah.
So you need to like involve that everything in your session, and how bigger is your stuff, how easier it is to coach on defending and attacking, because then you can one coach there, one coach there, but sometimes you might be in your own, and then, but you also need to involve with everything,
yeah,
within everything, and that makes it the training as well directly more like the game. And I think absolutely the girls did wonderful the last part of the season, and we made such a progression in playing games, but also intensity in the training. So yeah, I was really happy to see this. And like what I say, in the beginning you need to get used to the core values, to the stuff, to, with the stuff, with your colleagues, with your new colleagues. For me as well, at that time, a completely different culture, even when it was my own culture, I was gone for a long time. And got so used to the way in China that I had to really adjust myself as well. And I think, to be honest, like as a coach, you need to be adaptable a lot. You need to be really adaptable to the situation, to your players, to your culture, to the coaching stuff, to the club where you work at. And but you need to be open to discuss. You can also add some values from your own and go together with the
yeah.
more values. Yep. The team in the club.
No, definitely. And I think we'll have July to have a part two soon, because I think that's because we're going to probably dive into the kind of core values, philosophy, game model, you know, in the second part. But I'm interested in we've kind of got one more, kind of two more questions. But see, the obviously you said you work for the kind of Ajax, you know, International Academy. Do you try and, what's the kind of sessions like for that? Is that like fun sessions? Is that to do with the Ajax philosophy, Ajax methodology? Or is it more a kind of mix of like different communities and grassroots to, you know, make it more like a structure to the club? Or is it more...
I mean, it's like the Ajax Academy, they work together with another company and they do all the international camps and stuff. So what they do camps in Amsterdam, they do also camps all around the Netherlands to promote Ajax as well. But it's from grassroots to like quite good level. To be honest, like last year, I think we had a U16 group with quite a few very potential and semi-professional players from Spain, from Africa, from everywhere. So basically they come to the Netherlands to have a holiday with the family and at the same time have a training, have a real experience with coaching. The Ajax mythology, because we use the things of Ajax, like the core values and stuff. But like that is not just grassroots. Everyone can sign up. And they can try. Normally, it's fully booked real quick, but it's like mostly a 4-week program, and then every week is a different group who's coming in.
And that must be a kind of my last question on this is a kind of mindset. You must have to deal with, you know, lots of different players and different kind of, you know, from the players who have maybe got, you know, a lot of finance, the ones that maybe struggle, you know, with maybe not as much finance. But do you try and see through your mindset of, you know, that kind of growth mindset of I'm going to work with every single player to make them just that a little bit better, you know, to make them, you know, to improve. Basically, I know our camps are very, you know, sometimes can be quite long, but how do you try and keep that energy up with your mindset?
So, like, in the end of the day, I do think, like, it's really nice to if you run a session with amazing players because everything works. Just the thing is, as a coach, it's not just like it needs to work. No, you want to learn and something. So if you can progress the player who is on the top of the group, but you can also progress the player who is maybe a little bit more at the bottom, in terms of level, and you can bring them up. That's, I think, the best feeling that you can have. I mean, to win a game is absolutely nice, don't get me wrong, but like to develop kids, develop players, boys or girls, that doesn't really matter. In the end, it's like development's a bit of education. And also, I do believe like the kids or everyone, if someone coaches you, you remember that he make you feel amazing because you learn something from that person. And I think that's great. Yeah. I think you can give someone that feeling that you learn something from you. He will always remember that. Maybe not exactly what you taught him, but he will remember that you made him feel great because he got better.
Yeah. And that just must be a great feeling for a coach, you know, having that kind of that smile, because at the end of the day, sometimes they come in, children come in a wee bit nervous, you know, at camps because there's a lot of people around them. But as a coach, we just need to learn how to work with that individual. You know, that person might take 10 minutes or it might take them to the end of the Friday at 2 o'clock, you know, before they come out their shell. But that's, again, that's a mindset thing of, you know, developing that kind of relationship, but also working with, so having that experience working with such a variety of different children and youth, you know, and adults. But that must be something you're kind of always proud of, you know, to try and basically make people better, you know, make the child better by that 1%, but again, improve the relationship with every player. So therefore you have that way of thinking of, well, that person is just, it's not how you, what they know, it's how they know. How do they get there? Why are they here now? And they want to learn, but also make friends, but ask questions. And a lot of kids ask questions on the coaches, you know, like, because they're interested in, well, who's your favourite team? You know, it's always or Messi or Ronaldo. It's always the kind of same two, but it's always that. But thank you again, Brian, for your time, and we'll definitely have a part two, because we'll dive into the kind of more of the role at Sparta Rotterdam, and we can discuss the kind of game model and the week, how it all works from a kind of a periodisation model part.
Sure thing,
thank you.